Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast. My name is Gianmarco Segato, and today I'm speaking with Canadian soprano Michelle Capalbo, who will sing the title role in our fall 2010 production of Giuseppe Verdi's Aida. This is Michelle's debut with the COC, but she is certainly not new to the role of Aida, which she has sung in opera houses throughout the world, including Iran, just completed the San Francisco Opera. Is that right?
San Francisco is coming up.
Oh, it's coming up.
But
okay.
Curiously enough, I've sung this production from San Francisco in Houston already. So,
oh, I see. Okay.
So it's a revisit to this production in a different city.
Well, thank you very much for joining today. It's wonderful to have you here.
My pleasure.
Now, I've been taking a look at your website and doing a little bit of research into your background and the roles you've sung in the past, and it's quite obvious that Verdi plays a big part in your career. You've sung so many of the Verdi roles, such as Emilia in Un ballo in maschera, the Tu Leonoras, Desdemona, Violetta, Lady Macbeth, and the list goes on. But what I'd like to have a bit more of an idea about is, how does the role of Aida fit into this list of characters for you? And is the role similar or quite different than some of the other Verdi roles that you've sung before?
Aida is interesting because she comes near the end of his composing career, and so she's sort of the culmination of all of his vocal colors. And I like to say, a Verdi soprano, you know, because she can either sing it or she can't sing it, and he keeps you honest. He demands everything of the voice. Mm-hmm. So what you have to discover is how to do that within your instrument.
Right.
So what did you ask?
Well, just for Aida specifically, how do you see her as, is the vocal writing different than some of the other roles you've sung, or Verdi roles?
No, I really think it is indicative of the best of Verdi, frankly, because you can utilize chest voice, and certainly a lot of fil de voce, the very, very high, soft singing, which is the calling card for a lot of Verdi sopranos, and something that connoisseurs really look forward to hearing done well,
right.
One hopes. We are human, but one hopes that you can do it well. For me, Aida is probably the last great Verdi role that he wrote for sopranos in some ways. Mm-hmm. I know Desdemona comes after, but she's different.
Right.
The character is very different. She is not, if I may risk saying, heroic.
Mm-hmm.
She is just, the vocal writing is not heroic.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Alice Ford, which comes after, is totally
different
ensemble, demands all of the vocal character, all of the vocal technique, but there's no reward, there's no aria, it's just completely ensemble. So, in some ways, and I've sung Aida more than any other role in my career, I've done 13 different productions, I have a lot to pull on with this woman that I feel so close to and love, and I feel she's very modern, because her journey, in so much as we call her a slave, is universal. Her trials, her chameleon-type aspects that she tries to fit into life and just make it work for her, are universal.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the role and the opera continue to enchant audiences to this day.
Well, the story is fantastic, but I mean, Giuseppe Verdi, he know how to write a tune. He was really, really fantastic.
I'd just like to know, what are some of the musical moments, Aida, that have a special significance for you for whatever reason?
I love O Patria Mia.
Mm-hmm.
It is the second aria in the third act, of course, for Aida. It is remarkable because of its just the gorgeous, gorgeous line that sits, to get technical, right in the Verdi range, right above and in the passaggio for this type of Verdi soprano. The sopranos who can make it bloom and go up from there are the ones who are very successful in this. Now, the text, of course, is very personal to Aida, and the text, we hear her very colorful language. She's describing the blue sky and the Nile and all of this language, which is very, very colorful. But my favorite moment is the final duet. Okay, I know I should call it a trio, but really it's the duet with Radames when he's put into the tomb, because at that point, Aida is no longer She no longer has to be a chameleon. She no longer has to be a slave or a princess. That struggle is gone. She, at some point, has faced her destiny, and she's decided that she will come and she will die. And this is her choice. This is how she will die. And in her death, she will help her lover, the love of her life, pass on in as peaceful a manner as this warrior can, and that she decides her destiny, which for me is often a common thread for, especially in the tragic, okay, we'll leave Alice Ford out, but right. in the tragic heroines for Verdi, at some point, most of them look and they see their destiny. Sometimes it happens on stage and sometimes off.
Yeah, if you think of Desdemona,
Desdemona does, even Leonora in Trovatore, as much as she gets, this opera gets panned for just being, oh, you could cut out cardboard and just stick them on the stage. No, there are moments that if you search, she's looking all of a sudden at her destiny between these two men. And maybe it's not so clear that maybe it was always Manrico. Maybe not. if you're working with a great director, it makes life interesting.
Well, we'll listen to that final duet / trio now. The recording we'll be listening to is a vintage Decca recording featuring the Rome Opera Orchestra and chorus under Sir Georg Scholti. And we'll be listening to Leontine Price as Aida, John Vickers as Radames, and Rita Gore as Amneris.
Thank you.
sort of related to recordings, do you listen to recordings of past interpreters of the role?
Absolutely.
And what do you gain from this sort of practice?
It's, well, you gain tradition. You gain an appreciation for great conductors, great singers, and also an appreciation for what happens live, because a lot of these recordings are done live and some of them are studio recordings. Mm-hmm. So you gain an appreciation for what can be humanly done in live production versus a studio production that may be edited and maybe not,
yeah.
And maybe they got up at early first thing in the morning and sang all their high notes. But I find the live performance is so much more fascinating because they may be more imperfect,
right,
but they're more honest. They make me feel something, mm-hmm, and they have a better energy often.
It's very interesting because, yeah, I think you're the first singer that I've interviewed in this context that's mentioned live recordings, you know, as an avenue.
Well, when you figure what's going on with the recording industry,
right,
very few singers in my genre are being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we have live performances to go to. We have podcasts if we're lucky. Perhaps we're being televised, but it's live. It's honest.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal always in my business is to make you feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's not disgust. Hopefully, unless I'm singing Lady Macbeth.
Right.
But I'm always searching for the vulnerability. I want to portray that. I want to make it universal. I want you to get something out of it rather than, oh, that's a pretty tune.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty tune and her heart's breaking.
Right. And speaking of recordings, you have one of your own entitled Christmastide.
Yes.
And I've really enjoyed listening to some of the tracks.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a bit about the genesis of this particular project?
Well, like I said, it's hard to find any sort of means to the traditional means, as you,
right,
going back to your question regarding traditional recording. So I came up with an idea. I've always loved Christmas music. It's one of my fondest memories from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, you know, why don't I just try and see what I can do and get a few musicians together and relive some of those memories. And this was the result.
And is there a particular track we could listen to and you could perhaps tell us a bit about?
I chose some music that was spiritual in nature, but not specifically Christmas.
Right.
And La Vergine degli Angeli from La Forza del Destino, also Verdi, is one that I would like you to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It's I have some wonderful musicians from the Metropolitan Opera playing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, Leonora has come to the monastery to seek refuge. And she is praying right before she's sent out into exile, into solitude, to live in a cave. This is her destiny that she has chosen. and this is the prayer that they sing before she's given her monk habit to adorn herself with and just go off to live on bread and berries, basically.
Well, we'll listen to that track now, and I might add also that Michelle's CD is available at the opera shop to purchase during the run of Aida here at the COC.
Thank you.
So now we'll turn to sort of some more general questions. And what I'd like to know is, how did your singing life begin? How did it all start?
Well, I think it probably began like a lot of things do. I would just sing to myself. And I was a very shy child. And I sang just walking down the street to myself. When I was 8 years old, I figured, oh, darn, I'm so shy, I don't even know. I have to get involved in something. And in my school system, St. Anne's in Kitchener, there was at that time still a music program, believe it or not. And they made an announcement saying, these are the extracurricular activities for the year. And there was something called the Kiwanis Festival. And I had no idea what it was. But I decided that that would be my extracurricular activity to combat my shyness. And so I had voice lessons from this wonderful woman whose name I don't even remember, but she still has drawings. I still have the music with her drawings on how to hold your mouth. And I entered that when I was 8. And there were so many competitors at that time that they had to break it into preliminaries and finals. And so I made it past the preliminaries because I didn't know any better. And then I thought, oh, no, I'm getting a new dress and new shoes. This must be serious. So for the final, I totally froze. So that was the genesis of my musical career.
You're a Canadian singer, and you've sung quite a bit in opera houses across Canada. And I'm curious, did you have your training here in Canada as well?
I got my degree at the University of Western Ontario.
Oh.
However, I did go to New York to really learn how to sing opera. Mm-hmm. I found, because I came out of the choral tradition in Canada, I sang a lot of choral music, which will not be a foreign concept to a lot of your listeners.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So when I decided, or perhaps my voice decided that perhaps choral music wasn't the best suited to my gifts, whatever the flesh and blood in my throat, that I needed to learn how to sing. And at that point, I felt the best move for me would to really be something drastic. Mm-hmm. So I went to New York and I studied privately. Mm-hmm. And little by little we started there, and and that's how it, yes, absolutely. That's, you know, worked up from there is the way everyone could say it.
Yeah. Just like to ask a few questions now, more generally about soprano voices and how you feel yours fits into the whole scheme of things. So what are some of the typical roles associated with your type of soprano voice? And maybe we should start by you telling us what you think your type of soprano voice is, if it can be categorized.
They love to label singers in such narrow categories these days. And in a way, it makes things simple for the people casting.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's limiting to us on the other side of the table. Back in the day, let's say 40 plus years ago, sopranos were sopranos, and they either sang repertoire or they sang other repertoire. For the purposes of the current categories, I would probably say I'm a lirico spinto, but I've been called everything from lyric to dramatico, which I do not think I am, primarily because I love to work within the context of the lyric singing, although the spinto, in Italian, spingere, meaning to push, is a useful tool. I think it's dangerous to the voice to do it too often, too soon, too young, because it changes the voice. So for me, I will always, as long as possible, keep lirico as part of the descriptor for my voice, no matter what comes after.
I think I read a quote either on your CD or somewhere that somebody had said you were the great, new great Verismo soprano. So there's another.
Verismo is, more like Puccini and, Leoncavallo and that period of Italian, specifically composers. But I've also been called a Verdian, a Verismo. And sure, why not? Because they both start with V. No, really. I tend to specialize in Italian, and there is somewhat of a crossover.
Are there any singers of the present or past of any voice type who you particularly admire?
Oh, heavens. That one is really hard. That is particularly hard because I know what it takes to do what we do, and I admire so much what people do. Yes, I can name names. I mean, Leonie Riesenek and Renata Tabaldi. Maria Callas was interesting, but the vibrato was not to everyone's taste. Dramatically, she was more interesting. Leontine Price is very interesting. Martina Arroyo is very interesting. There's just so many, and then the more that I say, the more I come up with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sure. You don't even want to get me started on other voice types. We'll be here all day.
What are some of the other roles that you're working on right now?
Right now, I'm looking into Il Trittico by Puccini. And when I was starting out, we all have to choose our arias to audition with. And so everyone knows Lauretta, O mio babbino caro from Gianni Schicchi. And there are two others. These are a collection of three one-act operas. And the one that I'm looking into now that I have ignored up to now is Il Tabarro, which is the more dramatic, and Suor Angelica, of course, coming in the middle somewhere.
So you're looking at possibly trying to sing all three?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Are there any dream roles that you'd like to work on in the future?
If the opportunity arose that one day I could sing Norma, that would probably be really, really exciting. I'll tell you honestly, I'm old-fashioned in the way that I would actually like to start with Adelgisa to warm up to Norma. I know now they categorize it as mezzo and soprano, but the fact is their lines cross a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think I could be really old school in my thinking and start with Adelgisa, move up to Norma. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that one would be
cool. I think there's a real precedent for that, too. I mean,
absolutely.
I bet you may have done that, too.
Absolutely. Not today.
No, you're right. It's usually a mezzo.
Yes.
But I think it really works with soprano voice.
It just has to be a different color.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And what sorts of things do you like to do when you're not rehearsing or performing, if there's any time left over?
There is. I, recreationally, especially when I'm on the road and I have too much time on my hands, I love to paint because it keeps me out of trouble. And you don't always have family and friends, like I do in Toronto. I've been spending so much time catching up with family and friends that I haven't seen in years, and I've been spoiled here, but I don't always have that. So I will often just find myself a little canvas and some oils, and that's what I'll do.
Wonderful. Well, Michelle, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure having you here, and we very much look forward to hearing you in Aida.
Thank you.
For more information about the recordings we've been listening to and the COC's productions, please visit our website at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and season-related recordings online. This is Gianmarco Sagato. Please join me again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by DECA, the opera label.